Heyo, what is up, everybody? My name is MJ, and you are listening to the one and only MTG in Quarantine podcast, where the motto is EDH, community, now and always. As usual, before we get started on today's show, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like you to utilize this opportunity to give a huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/mdginquarantine. So huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Benz, Nick S., Frugal Brutal, and Coach J-Ro for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mdginquarantine for more information. And if you haven't heard before, I am a Quiver Time brand ambassador over at quivertime.com. You can utilize my promo code MTGIQ, again, all lower caps, MTGIQ, at checkout for 10% off your order. They got a bunch of really awesome products over there, the full Quiver case, bolt case, the Orion playmat tube, or any of their other products. Again, you can get 10% off your order with it, promo code MTGIQ. And you can also pick up your very own MTG in Quarantine branded playmat over at Inked Gaming. That's inkedgaming.com. Got two really awesome versions, both the full of color logo as well as the grayscale version. They look killer, and you're gonna want one for you and all of your friends. So again, you can go on over to Inked Gaming. That's inkedgaming.com. And again, every purchase helps support this channel and is greatly appreciated. All right, well, I've been in a bit of a stupor since MC Chicago happened a few weeks back, kind of haven't gotten back in the content game, and that ends now. So we're going to be back here with some more hard-hitting Commander talk with a good friend who hasn't been on the show for a bit, but is definitely welcome back anytime to talk about all things Commander, cool stuff, EDH, and all that cool stuff. So without further ado, I'd like to reintroduce today's guest. You've heard him before. He's on a different show than before, but his username hasn't changed. Cole, the Uncommon Commander. Welcome to the show.
Hey, glad to be back after so long. And yeah, I think I'm going to have to stick with this name for at least another year before I do anything with it.
Yeah, you know, trying to change your name on Twitter or just on social media is always so hard because, you know, you have that, I don't know, that brand equity, I suppose, is the best way to say it. It's like people know you as that whenever anyone changes their username. It's like, who is this person? What?
I've been on the internet. I'm going to date myself here. So I'm 29, going on 30, and I've been on the internet, on social media for since I was maybe 12 or 13. And you know when you make that username when you're a teenager, and that kind of just like, that's the name you're going to use for probably until you die or something like that? I used Eclipse Meteor was the name that I used sometimes, and then Magic happened, and then the podcast happened. That's the Uncommon Commander podcast, in case anyone didn't know. And then you're like, well, I guess I should probably change my Twitter handle so I can be the Uncommon Commander guy. And then you decide to stop doing the Uncommon Commander podcast, and then you're like, well, now I'm stuck. online yeah. Social media stuff is so weird.
Weren't the aughts kind of funny like that, where we legitimately thought that first generic email we were going to use when we were in middle school, let's say, it was going to, you know, be our whole personality, right? So I personally remember trying to think, it's like, what is the coolest thing that a 13-year-old kid can think
some
of?
Some edgy something.
And now I look
something.
Back out. Yeah, and looking back on it, I was like, really? That's what I came up with? But, you know, at the time, it seemed perfectly normal. Mm-hmm. So, those were heady days. I mean, we were talking before the show about message boards, online forums. Like, this already dates us a significant amount in today's economy, right? Mm-hmm. It's like most Zoomers are not going to know anything about those old days. And I'm not saying I was even involved in like the old AOL chat and all that. That was before
Well before. I'm not saying it was before my time, but I had a computer at the end of when dial-up was a thing. God, the internet is radically different now than it was like 20 years ago.
Oh man, it's crazy, crazy stuff. The internet isn't just for fantasy football leagues anymore.
No, now you can have 20 fantasy football leagues going at once, all from the comfort of your phone.
Yeah, and that's the weird thing. It's just like, and you don't even have to use Yahoo anymore, yet my group still does, just because it's tradition. But we are getting way ahead of yourselves. Cole, reintroduce yourself, who you are, and what you do.
Yeah, my name is Cole. I was the host of the Uncommon Commander podcast, and I'm now currently the co-host of the Heroes Blade Vibe Check podcast, where myself and Empress Quinn meet up every couple weeks and talk about games we've played, brews we're brewing, news, content, and if a commander passes the Heroes Blade vibe check, where, hey, does your commander really like holding an equipment that gives it +3/+2 and auto equips for free when a legendary enters the battlefield? And shifted gears within the last few months, talking lots of games, personal statistics. I've been keeping track of games for this calendar year, and I think I've already played over 60 or 70 games between January and February. And yeah, it's been a really good time, a good change of pace, and two guests so far. So yeah, it's been a great time.
Jeez, and I thought I was going crazy with my exactly 49 games up to this point as of recording. So it seems like I have some ground I need to make up there.
There's been a lot of three-player games on that thing. So it's the statistics favor for the quick three-player games more than anything else.
Yeah, fair enough. Hey, I still think a three-player game, and if this is a cancelable take, I don't care. My hot take for today is I still think a three-player EDH game is more of an EDH game than a two-player game. I'm sorry, I don't see a two-player EDH game really counting towards statistics that I want to use for, you know, saying what my win percentage is and things like that, because you're only playing against one opponent. There's no real multiplayer aspect to that.
This is a take I think you're going to agree with. I'll just be honest about that.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of folks I know aren't really hot on three-player pods. It's like, I'm not either, but if you only have three people and you don't want to just sit there twiddling your thumbs waiting for 20 minutes at your game store, hoping someone else shows up who's not going to rock the boat, in some cases, you know, it's better to just play a three-player game. So, there's my little hot take there. Also, I do believe I have a good commander out of my own collection, my cadre, the Dark Dungeons of my collection that would actually perfectly work with or at least perfectly pass the Heroes Blade vibe check. So we can talk about that later. But anyway, yeah, back to the concept of today's episode, and that is going to be what constitutes a signature deck. We're going to try to first define exactly what a signature deck is, then we're going to just jump into some compare and contrast of our two favorite decks. So Cole and I, you and before the show, we obviously swapped our lists. We've been talking to each other about our decks for, what, like 2 years now?
Feels about it,
If not longer. And, yeah, it's like we have a good amount of familiarity with each other's thought process. But, again, we also talked it out just kind of before the show, just making sure we were on the same page about this so we can bring the savings on to you, the listener, and help you understand exactly why we're so crazy about these decks. I mean, I almost went with the version of that would make me have to slap the explicit tag on there, and I wasn't going
to
do
then
that.
I will try my best to also not do that to you.
If it happens, it happens. I mean, you know, stuff happens. But anyway, so we're going to start off with what a signature deck really means to you, and I'm going to jump or throw this one over to you, Cole. What exactly, how do you define a signature deck, and what does it mean?
All right. So as someone who is currently in the niche content creator game, quote unquote, and who listens to other people and has quite a long history with some people that I play with Magic and Commander wise, to me, a signature deck is of two meanings. One is, what is your personal signature deck from your perspective as a player, as a brewer, and a commander? You know, commander decks have a lot of value to people for a lot of different reasons. It's a way to express themselves. It's a way to push their knowledge of the game, the game's mechanics, possibly a way how they pilot it. So there's the personal cognitive perspective. And then there is the social cognitive perspective of your peers, your friends, people you've played with. What do they think is your signature deck? And some people have a lot of different opinions of that, but it also depends on how do you present yourself to your friends? You know, do you have the five decks that you only cycle between? That's me, kind of. Most people would say it's the one deck in my case, which we'll be talking about that one in a sec. So it's a multi-layered meaning, and we're going to go over why, you know, my particular deck that I've chosen for this discussion is not only my personal deck, but other people are really starting to recognize it as my personal iconic signature deck.
Well, that's because you talk about it all the dang time over on Twitter, so you kind of just force it upon people, too.
You will see it, and you will also see the hashtag that goes with every single post of it, and you cannot escape.
Oh, don't get me started on that. You and you kids and your fancy hashtags back in my day.
Back in my day. We're totally not getting any older. We're totally not dating ourselves here.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. But anyway, I do agree with Cole as far as how I would define a signature deck. It's basically, to me, the deck that you, again, don't shut up about, but also the one that you put the most time and care into. It's going to be kind of like that trophy that you're going to have sitting in the trophy case, even if it's really no more important than the other trophies you have sitting on your mantle, or if you don't have any. Let's say it's even like that, middle school trophy of any kind. It's like, this is the thing that you want. Whenever you look at it, it makes you happy. That when you bring it to a game of Commander, you know you're going to at least enjoy playing that deck that you built, because you put in that time, that care, that effort to make it, to mold it in a way, just like clay, into the way that you want it. And in a way, no other deck you ever build will ever match up to that ridiculously high standard that you've set for yourself. So maybe I'm kind of proselytizing this a bit too much, you know, blowing it out of proportion, but in a way, that's really how I look at a signature deck. It's like it is a extension of your personality, and you want to see it thrive.
Yeah. I mean, if I don't know how many shout outs I can do that maybe people would not recognize or not, but like, if we're looking at it from the
Okay.
Hey, Spike Feeders. Everyone knows who the Spike Feeders are. I hope you know who Jim LePage is, because he's a pretty cool guy, and now he's part of the rules committee.
That's funny. It's like I had him on the show, an episode of the show before, you know. Listeners, if you want to listen to that episode, you can definitely go find that on the on all the usual podcast outlets. But again, that is outside the points. Continue. But
I also had Jim LePage on an episode of the Uncommon Commander podcast, and it was about
what?
And to me, as someone who doesn't know him but has talked to him and seen him talk about things, his iconic deck to me, from a fan perspective, is his Torwaki the Younger deck. That's about his, all the cards in his deck are one drops or lands, or, you know, one mana pip and an X spell or something. But on one hand, he says this a lot. He's like, I don't really upgrade. He doesn't upgrade his decks, as soon as a new card comes out, and it'll take maybe 1 or 2 years to do it. But when you think about it, that is possibly going to be a project that exists over an extended period of time, as a niche deck building experience, as a niche deck building challenge, a deck he can bring feasibly anywhere and show off what he's committed to that particular brew. And, you know, maybe that's not his quote unquote signature deck, but to me, as an outside observer, it is. But now let's talk about how you and I have our personal ones. And yes, now I'm also forcing and imposing the will of Blood Trick on other people.
Oh, how dare you?
I'm assuming direct control of the podcast. It's now have to talk about it.
No. Just go away. No, seriously, please continue.
So like you said, you and I have talked about these decks with each other on and off throughout the last couple years. God, it feels like 3 years is coming up pretty quick in terms of how we've been chatting with each other. My signature deck, and is one that I'm personally heavily invested in, one I would arguably triple sleeve if I was a monster, but it'll stay single sleeve for as long as I could reasonably tolerate that, is my Odric Blood Curse deck that I've had in various states since late... Well, I mean, since... not Midnight Hunt. Crimson Vow came out.
Yeah.
It's a deck that as soon as I reasonably could, I put an order in to Card Kingdom, I think, or some other, some, and like, it took forever to show up. It came up super late after the fact. The prices dropped, like, within, like, the week or two after it came out that I spent way too much money on, like, Audric and some of the other cards that I was having shipped up. But I was committed day one. I was committed day one when the preview came out. And I, over the last two, feels like 2 years, I've been changing and tweaking and tuning it to my personal philosophy that caters to my tastes. It is the deck that I praise above all else. It's the one that I would want to show off on a brand new commander table anywhere I go. This is my deck. This is my personally, like, iconic deck.
Okay. So, yeah, since the folks are listening to this on audio, could you explain exactly what your deck is trying to do, what the game plan is, and just generally why you enjoy this deck so much?
Yeah, okay. So, on top of being a version of a card, or being a version of a character that is very beloved if you are a lover of Innistrad lore, if you're a Vorthos like that, that's one thing. Audric has Audric Bloodcursed is a one red and a white vampire soldier 3/3 that when he enters the battlefield, you create X blood tokens equal to the number of up to 12 different keywords, which doesn't include Skulk like a second version, but does include like Menace and Vigilance and surprisingly Hexproof, because I guess it was kind of around the time they were kind of reintroducing it back into the game. And then blood tokens are, it's an artifact, you pay one, tap it, sacrifice it, you discard a card, and you draw a card. And now you're like, well, why would you do this? You have to jump through hoops. And that's the one of the fun things that I like about Commander and about Magic, is that there is obviously the tried and true path of playing Magic. Path of Least Resistance, you play the most efficient stuff, you get the most efficient turnout. We're playing Commander, it's 2024, yada yada. But to me, there's a lot more rewardable play by playing Audric based off what I've done. And that includes playing some of the best or the most interesting creatures with one or two, maybe even three keywords on them that allow them to function by themselves, turn sideways, give me some kind of card advantage or not. Then I back it up with some of the best of what mono white and mono red has to give for certain particular effects, like card advantage, reanimation, protection effects. And of course you get your good old haymakers like Akroma's Will for the Emperor from the Warhammer 40K set. You get your removal, you get your ramp, you get the standard stuff, and then you just use it in a combination that has a bit of graveyard synergy, a bit of artifact synergy, and you try to meld it together in as neat of a package as you can in a Boros pseudo aggro slash mid-range shell. And you get my Audric Bloodcursed deck that has been through the ringer since inception. And the current version is just a mishmash of every single card and effect that you can think of that caters to those types of effects.
Sure, sure. And also the fact that you're trying, or at least you have attempted to weaponize those blood tokens as equipment, also really helps too.
Yeah. This particular version of the deck, you know, I wish I had like a version count, because it'd be like at a version 120 at this point or something. There was a very brief time where I wanted to use Dan Lewis from the Doctor Who set, who makes non-equipment artifacts, equipment that gives +1/+0 and equip one. And then the other card in the deck that does a very similar thing is Arterial Alchemy, which is a 3-mana enchantment that when it enters, you make blood tokens equal to the number of your opponents and then their equipment that give +2/+0 and equip for two, which was part of the Crimson Vow Rakdos Vampire deck. And then, of course, comes back to the question of why would you make a blood deck around Audric when you could do it against the tried and true of whatever Rakdos is doing. And my answer to that is, again, is the extra hoop. It's the extra steps. Also, I like playing I like playing Rakdos, but I'll play Rakdos differently than how I want to play Boros right now. And yeah, the methods are, you know, do you use it for just base card advantage to pitch your bad card for maybe potentially a good one? Do you want to pitch your reanimation target for later? With some of the other cards that I put in over time, like I have Sunshot Militia, which is from Lost Guys from Sixalon. Do you maybe want to take the turn to use them to damage your opponents instead? So there's a lot of flexibility and open-endedness, which is what I like about Commander in general. But it still has that dedicated plan of we're turning creatures sideways, we're burning face, we're making artifacts, whatever happens that may be, on top of the blood tokens.
Yeah, you definitely have a lot of ways to give yourself extra combats, do extra damage, just do the typical Boros things. You're just coming at it from a different angle. I think that's really the key right here.
Yeah, and I guess kind of the last factor of this deck's creation and its current existence for as long as I've had it is that people, as they do, regardless if it's on YouTube, on Twitter, wherever people gather to look at previews, is that this Audric came out, and after having Master Tactician and Lunark Marshall, people were like, wow, this guy sucks. And I'm like, no, hold on. There's something here, and I need to know what it is. I feel as if I've found it, and I will continue to find what this version of Audric brings to the table.
Mm-hmm. All right, so it's time to move on over to my signature deck. And if you've been listening to the show long enough, I did a deck tech on this a couple years ago. I don't know if it's still updated or not, because I made a few changes to this. But if you've been listening to the show for a long time and you've been following me on the socials, you probably know that I don't shut up about my favorite demon boy, Kothfed, Soul Hoarder, back from Magic Origins, I believe, so 2015 or so. And basically, I originally built this deck to kind of out of spite, I guess, just to spite another player. But I ended up just really enjoying the deck, and it ended up becoming such a part of my personality that I will brag at this point. I feel like I'm the world's expert on this particular deck.
You should wear that badge with honor, you know? It's not every day you have someone be solely committed to a particular legendary creature at this quote-unquote relative power level.
Sure. But, I mean, as far as I can say or stake my claim to, this guy still only has, 110 decks on EDH Rec after all these years? I mean, I built him when it was, 50, and now maybe it's doubled a little bit, and that's with multiple reprints and commander sets. So people just don't give a dang about this guy. And that's what I really love about this particular deck, is people don't know what he does, or they say, oh, that guy, and then, you know, just awkward pause after that in the pregame discussion. And they don't really know the depths that I'm willing to go to make this deck work. So how this deck works is Kothfed is a 6/6 demon for 4 black-black, has flying, and again, the important thing here is whenever a permanent owned by another player, and again, that's a permanent, doesn't say non-land permanent, a permanent, is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, I draw a card and I will lose one life. So on the face of this is kind of an inefficient flying creature for nowadays. 6/6 for 6 with flying, you know, in mono black. It's basically, this seems like a card that's straight out of 2015, and it totally is. But when you consider the number of edict effects, as well as just easy ways to gain life in mono black, this deck really starts to take shape. So I look at Kothfed as a, not just as a 6/6 flying demon boy, because that, let's be honest, that's just really freaking cool. But obviously, I want to make sure I'm able to draw a bunch of cards, but also not kill myself by losing all of my life. Obviously, we started 40 life, and that can get burned down pretty easily with 3 other players. So I run a lot of other ways in this particular deck to try to be able to gain life. I'm running typical things that have, I'm running my Sangromancer, so gain some life when people lose creatures, discard cards. I'm running small creatures with lifelink, Vampire Cutthroat, Vampire of the Dire Moon, things, trying to think of here, Gifted Etherborn, just, you know, small things that are going to gain me life. But also, as we were discussing at the top of the show here, Cole, I really need cards that fit within a niche, because just like your Audric deck, this particular deck doesn't rely upon a generic value engine commander. In this year of 2024, where it seems like we're just getting commanders that poop out ridiculous amounts of value for less and less mana, or God forbid, have ward attached to them in some shape or form. We, as these connoisseurs of these decks that seem quote unquote, and again, I'm doing the scare quotes here as I always do, suboptimal commanders or very niche commanders in color, potentially in colors that don't really do the thing that wants to, you know, wants to work upon that axis, right? We have to really search high and low for cards that really fit that theme. And I've had to really work to find creatures that work with this theme. So I'm also running your Edict creatures on a stick. I'm running your Fleshbag Marauders and your Plague Crafters and things like that, which force my other opponents to sacrifice a creature each. Because all of a sudden, for 3 mana, I not only clear a creature off everyone's board, and again, sometimes it's commander, sometimes it's going to be a token, but the concept is I'm getting 3 cards for this 3 mana. I'm losing 3 life. Again, I don't like that, but it just comes with the territory of, you know, the demonic contract. It's a whole Vorthos thing. I'm not going to go into that, but basically, I look at it as trading 3 mana for 3 cards. And all of a sudden, if over the course of several turns, I'm able to do this multiple times, or just, you know, if someone just board wipes, honestly, I'm able to just draw a burst of 15, 20 cards. Now, I could die out of this, and that's kind of the point of the entire deck, because I'm walking on the edge of a razor blade, really, is how I look at this particular deck. I've died on turn 6 when 50 tokens blew up simultaneously. What can you do about it, right? But this deck really speaks to me because it is walking on the edge of that razor blade. It can kill you, but it can also just be an absolute roller coaster thrill ride too. And I'm running a lot of ways to gain life in here. I'm looking at Grey Merchant of Asphodel. I'm running just various other cards you're not going to see in a lot of decks. I'm running Prism Ring, which is an artifact costing 1 generic. When it enters the battlefield, choose a color. Whenever you cast a spell of the chosen color, you gain 1 life. Name black, all of a sudden, whenever I cast a black spell, I gain 1 life. Yeah, sure, it's 1 life, but also when you think about it, with Kothavid conversion rate, 1 life equals 1 card. And I'm 1 card closer to trying to win in the endgame. I'm 1 life less, or I'm 1 life further away from dying. There we go. That's how I was trying to say it.
This is the thing, if you're the type of person who does listen to a lot of content creators, and I am one of those people, and you and I have both been consumers of content, whether we're actively doing it now or not. But I think there's a lot of constants in Magic and a lot of constants in Commander, where Kothaped maybe not be the most efficient version of a lot of these effects. But let's just get down to the stats, right? Regardless of the mana value, you have a flying 6-6, which is nothing to snuff at nowadays, and evasion is key in Commander games if you are willing to turn your creature sideways. I am a big advocate for combat. That is the whole point of the podcast of the Hero's Blade, where it's like, hey, does your commander like getting the +3/+2 boost? Yes. Turn that thing sideways, get in there on top of whatever else you're doing. If you need a blocker that's flying, a 6-6 is also really good, a really good body. And on top of that, you have a commander that has a theoretical infinite ceiling of how many cards and how much life you can lose. And the life loss can always be managed over time. And you do have 99 other cards in your deck that you have to be concerned about to make sure that you're not drawing yourself to death either. But you still have the potential of someone being like, cool, I have like 5 treasures, or in my case, as the Audric Blood Curse guy, I'm like, cool, I'm going to sack 3 blood tokens, and I'm going to be tempted to sift through my deck to do my thing, but in the meantime, I'm also giving you card advantage. And you know what? People like playing the Rhystic Studies. People like playing things that depend on other people or rely on other people to do game actions to gain some form of card advantage. Mana ramp, make treasures, make clues, whatever it happens to be. That is still a very powerful effect. And that's why when I look at you and your commitment to this, is that Kothoped may be old hat. It might be an old dog. But it still has a very... It has valid stats and a valid effect, and that should not be scoffed at or dismissed, especially nowadays in Commander.
There we go. Thank you. That is exactly what I've been trying to tell people for, like, the last 2 years, but I could not put it into words. So thank you, Cole. I no longer need to talk about this deck.
All right, there, and that's the that's this episode, everyone. Yep. We'll talk to you in the next one.
No, but seriously, Cole, you are very correct about that. Is this Commander allows me to gain a bunch of passive value just from other folks' game actions. Like I said before, if someone wants to board wipe just to get my commander off the table, you know, I'm gaining incremental value off of that and also getting myself that much further away from dying, potentially. Because, you know, sometimes having my boy on the board actually visibly hurts me, too. So, you know, I have to have safety valves to get him out of the game. If, you know, if someone does drop a Smothering Tithe, then I know, I'm going to lose a Smothering Tithe. Been there, done that. Kind of old hat, kind of like 2021 kind of talk right there. So I have ways to get rid of him. You know, it's like people, honestly, whenever I play them, it's like, oh, well, Smothering Tithe. Well, you really think that you're the first person I have talked to about this, right? It's like, I built this deck because someone said Smothering Tithe made this unplayable, right? So, you know, I know what I'm getting myself into, and I still built it anyway. And if that makes me crazy, then call me crazy. But if Kothoped has only one fan in the world, I'm going to be that one fan. When he has no fans in the world, it means I'm not playing Magic anymore.
I'm reaching through the screen. I'm reaching through the internet. We are grasping hands, and I agree with you. We are... If we die, we are the last, like, we were the last fan of these two creatures, and there are no more fans in the world.
Definitely. And, yeah, so now that we've explained really what our thought processes are, as far as these particular decks, Cole, how would you really define the signature deck for someone who's really getting into Magic, who maybe doesn't understand someone having a calling card? I mean, obviously, in various other endeavors of entertainment, we have those, I'm trying to think of the right word, transcendent individuals where they have just the right thing at the right time. We're going to talk about Michael Jordan's. We're going to talk about any sort of other entertainment stuff. I don't really pay attention to celebrity stuff, but we're going to have those landmark moments. Lord of the Rings winning Best Picture at the Oscars in 2004, Return of the King. It's like these things that really stand out.
Yeah.
How do you really define that signature deck, the decks that really define who we are as players, the ones that we have put all of this time and effort into that we've talked about over the last 20-ish minutes, to someone who is just starting out and may not understand how personal some of these EDH decks can really get for the individual players?
Like, all it comes down to is that we, let's go into stereotypes for it. Magic is about the gathering, which means you get together with people, you play Magic. No duh, right? That's no brainer. But when we think about what Commander's foundation is as a fan-made format, is that it is about expression, and the expression of what people do to show, like, show off their deck, show off their playstyle, is that they, let's do some superficial stuff that maybe you can see. How often does the person play the deck? How much effort do they put into that deck? You know, some people have Commander decks since Commander's inception that have not upgraded or changed their decks in any way. And whether that's the commitment to preserving the brew, or it's someone who's spent hours and dollars, and maybe even added a little bit of extra personal bling to their presentation of the deck. How many foils does the person have? How many special artwork versions does the person have for that deck? What about the commander? You know, did someone get an artist proof? Did someone get the signature of the artist on the card? Did they commission an artist to make a special version of that card? Did they make their own custom card of that legend, you know? So there's the superficial of, like, how often do they play it? How much have they invested into it? how often have they not tweaked it or tweaked it over the course of a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years? And then there's, of course, the energy that they bring to the table with that deck, which I think is a little more nuanced, because everyone's, you know, I think you and I have played with a lot of people who are very subtle, very relaxed, or, you know, players who don't really, maybe they don't give off the most high energy in a game, because that's just not who they are as people. And then there are the people who, you know, who get up really excited and they scream, "I'm that person, I'm super duper loud." So how do they play the game with the deck? How do they engage with other people? Are they enthusiastic to show off what the deck does? You know, the bling's one thing. I bling out my decks, but I also know that it's about what you do with those cards too, because they are game pieces at the end of the day. So it's like, you know, how did your deck construction come together? How is the strategy deployed? How do you pilot yourself in the various situations that you encounter on a game-to-game and player-to-player basis? So to the new players, or the people who aren't very well experienced in Magic and Commander, just keep an eye out to how people treat their plays, how they treat their cards, how they present themselves, and how they present the deck. And that'll probably give you a good indication of what exactly they consider to be iconic for themselves. And then that will probably also color your perception of what is an iconic deck for them as the outside perspective.
Yeah, for sure. And again, it really comes down to that commitment to the bit, right? Is that these are the kinds of decks that those players are going to be blinging out. A lot of folks do foil out your deck. Cole, I see that you've pretty much done that with all the cards that are available in foil.
As much as I can reasonably afford
to. And I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, obviously there are a few cards that, you know, were old enough that they didn't have foils, or just ridiculous amount. I'm not even going to talk about 7th edition foils here, where that's just a whole different conversation entirely. But yes, reasonably, the deck that people really talk the most about, that they really have in that reverence. And in my case, I just have Jess from Inkling Customs just do an altar of that commander. And Kothfed was one of the first that I asked to be done in a particular art style. And honestly, the concept of this big evil demon boy who worries about contracts, just basically wearing like an open Hawaiian shirt. I imagine he's on like vacation or something. I just can't help but smile about that. It's like that's really the difference for these decks for me between that and just, you know, someone picking up a pre-con or someone's like, "Oh, I just built XYZ, you know, from a 2023 command or something like that." Or, you know, a lot of people are really excited about the Fallout decks right now. Obviously, that's a big hot thing. It just came out as of recording. But if you come back in a year, are people really going to care so much about, and again, I'm not a Fallout fan, so this means nothing to me, unfortunately. So I apologize in advance, but is anyone going to be playing the Wise Mothman in a year and really being excited about
this
it?
The thing is that, MJ, how long have you been playing Magic for?
I've been playing Magic for 5 years. Cole.
So I've been playing Magic, quote unquote, full time since 2011. And I've known, I played with and know a lot of people who've played Magic since its inception, whether they took breaks or not. That's a whole other thing, right? And so when Universes Beyond shows up on our doorstep in the form of The Walking Dead, right? My reaction at the time in that moment was visceral anger, because I'm like, who cares about The Walking Dead? But The Walking Dead is, you know, it's kind of technically a relatively newer IP. So there were fans, but you know what? They were testing the waters. And then we kind of go forward a little bit and we start looking at some other ones. I know some people who are diehard Transformers fans who have happened to play Magic. And I know for a fact that one of my personal friends that I know, she would love to get her hands on the alt art versions of the Transformer cards, because she is very invested in the comic books. And she's like, "I would love a Shattered Glass Starscream." What does that mean to you, MJ? Nothing. What is Shattered Glass? To me, I got the rundown on it. You know, alternate reality version. That's cool. Fallout is has been a big thing since the 90s, from Fallout 1 and 2. Frank, oh god, I'm, and this is where I'm going to get eviscerated. Frank Morgan, I think, is the one of the new legends. If people had Fallout 2 as a very inspirational game for them, they will probably want to make a Frank deck and keep that around because they love that media so much. And we're kind of on the cusp of the universe's beyond ridiculousness that will be released in the next couple of years. And people will want to have like their Spider-Man decks, for example, right? Like people love Spider-Man. And so it's easy to say who cares about the Mothman. Well, maybe if you like cryptids, maybe people like the Mothman for that, not necessarily Fallout, right? But I think you and I are also examples of, you know, people will find their niche, because as much as people do like powerful cards, and people do like powerful cards, I'm guilty lover of incredibly powerful Magic cards. I just like using them on a different axis. You know, people like using the One Ring. People like using Soul Ring. People like using Rhystic Study. People like using Blasphemous Act or whatever have you, right? Everyone will find their niche, and how that shows up on a commander table is a case-by-case basis, and whether or not that's a Audric Bloodcursed or Kothaped or Megatron or whoever, it will show up in some way, shape, or form, and you will be able to see the love and adoration that people have for those Magic cards.
All right, fair enough. I realized as soon as I said that, it's like, yeah, that did not come out exactly right. So I will clarify my point. I guess where we as creators, in the creator sphere specifically, we see folks building that because it's the hot new set right now. I guess for those particular players, kind of, I don't necessarily want to say we're totally
enfranchised,
but I guess
we really
are. Enfranchised. In the fact that we're talking about this so much. But yeah, how many folks who we interact with on a daily basis are going to keep that Wise Mothman deck and really keep it updated a year from now? I think that's where I was really going with this. It's like how, with the sheer amount of product that is coming out these days and just the ridiculous number of legendary creatures, are a lot of folks who are building this because it's the hot new item really going to keep up with that deck? Or is it going to be the kind of thing that then you see that when everyone has their purge, their deck purge, I just saw that today too. It's like people wanting to just nuke some of their old decks to rip them apart for parts. Is that Wise Mothman deck, just for example, going to be one of those that they will have by this time next year and that they will have updated? And I really feel like the question is going to be maybe, but in a lot of cases, probably no. It was the flavor of the month now. It might be for the Fallout fans, but again, for every Fallout fan, you're going to have someone like me who's never played the game, so it doesn't really resonate with me personally.
Thing, right, is that everyone is going to have the honeymoon period with a set, depending on if that set is them for not, right? I got one of the Fallout pre-cons. I bought a few singles. You can see a few of them in this Audric Bloodcursed list just because they happen to fit the niche that I'm looking for this strategy. And admittedly, like, yeah, you know what? We're hearing a lot about the pre-cons right now in gameplay videos and streams. I know a few people who have bought just the Wise Mothman and are building around that. And will we see that many decks even in 6 months or a year? Probably not. There's no way in hell, right? Oh, but
we're it's already fine.
There. But I think we will see in a year that we will see the select few who've chosen to champion the Wise Mothman, for the meme, for the bit, for the mechanic, because at the moment red counters are pretty unique. It is a surprisingly powerful card as well. It will have its fans, and when, you know, the honeymoon phase is over and passions have died down, we will see who is truly the champion of the Wise Mothman. And, I'm hoping I get to see whoever that person is, hold it up in the sky like it's Simba and the Lion King.
For sure, for sure. And I think that's really where I was trying to go with this, is that you really start after a while seeing who is willing to commit to the bit and who's just doing that because it's flavor of the month or because they want to try and then just fall off over time. And again, we're coming at this from very differently because we're playing Magic cards that came from the Magic IP. So I feel like the draw in our case is very different in a way, because we're, you know, because it's a little different than the Versus Beyond, which is intended to play upon your nostalgia, whereas Magic can just kind of keep going in theory infinitely with its characters and its IP.
We're at a very, you know, uncertain point of Magic's future for a lot of different reasons. I'm simultaneously fearful and excited to see what's happening. But when I look at what you and I are up to in terms of our sort of personal iconic forever decks, because I'm not going to lie, my decks could be stick around for a long time, regardless if it's a Ship of Theseus. I kept saying it before the podcast, but a Ship of Theseus, where the iteration of this deck has changed numerous times, but the foundation is still the same, and I'll carry that core, that foundation, into the future for as long as I am reasonably able to do so. And I definitely hope to see that your Kothbed deck, you know, in the next 2, 3, 5 years down the line.
I'm sure we'll have some epic battles eventually, but as a reminder, we need to play
Marvel. Yeah, I know.
That just has to happen.
That happens with everyone, and it's true. I do need to play Magic with a lot of people.
I'm not going to shame you, but I'm just saying.
You got me recorded too. How can you do this to me?
Yep, I'm putting you on blast. That's just the way I roll, Cole. But it's seriously though, I do understand the concept of these decks just take shape over time. Again, this is just going back to my analogy of molding that clay, is that the concept is there. The cards, the pieces that make it up may not be the same, but the idea is there. It's like a car, right? It's like the concept, or at least the idea of the motor car, is to be able to drive from one place to another. In theory, it doesn't matter what you drive as long as it gets you there, right? But, you know, the pieces of that vehicle are going to, you know, change your experience, I would say. So versus having like a 70s jalopy versus these vehicles now that have just all these ridiculous amounts of features and put you in the bankruptcy when you try to purchase one. But really where I'm going with this is that you don't necessarily need the right pieces. But since they are a signature deck, we want to have the right pieces because these are so personal that we're willing to tinker with things. And this is no different than people working on cars, right? It's like, this is your hobby. You want to make it your own. And we are willing to do that to the nth degree with these certain decks. Whereas, you know, if we just had like a regular deck of the line, you know, something, whatever you've been working on most recently, you've had for 6 months, something I've been working on for a year, let's say, we might update it every now and then if there's a card that comes, it's like, oh, hey, this screams XYZ deck. But as far as this particular signature deck goes, I know you're always looking for cards that fit in there. You're always going on Twitter. You're talking about, oh, this card could work. What do I cut?
I am the owner of a lot of Commander decks, and I'm a strong advocate of picking up singles when you're able to. You know, I do upgrade some of my other decks every once in a while that I still really enjoy.
But you love them enough?
To sit, to lay myself on the line for those decks? In no way, no way. This is my baby. This is everything. And
there we go. It's only taken us an hour, but we finally got there.
I would sacrifice my first child to ensure the safety of this deck. But seriously though, like,
I'm holding you to that.
Having children then. The amount of time and effort and the tweets that I make on Twitter about all the cards that are coming out that can feasibly fit in Adric Bloodcursed for my personal vision is so immense and so endless that I have enough cards in my consideration category on Moxfield that could make a secondary Adric Bloodcursed deck that I know I would not make because it just wouldn't be the same. And that is the amount of effort and the amount of personal agonizing suffering over cuts iterating on with the previous vision. And I've done some crazy stuff with this deck that is borderline unspeakable, that I make people get really excited to see it pop off. So, you know, yeah, this deck is everything. It's everything I love about Magic. It's everything I love about Commander and Brewing. And, yeah, it's crazy what I've done to make this deck work.
Mm-hmm. And I know we've talked about this a lot, but do you really think there's like a secret sauce that makes a deck your signature? Can you really explain why this particular deck speaks to you more than any other one you've ever built?
Let's talk about my history here. I've been playing Commander for over a decade. One of my previous decks that was my signature deck used to be a Animar Soul of Elements deck. And it was a dragon-themed deck that I was slowly starting to foil out, including some of the most expensive dragon cards that were in Commander at the time, around like 2011, 2013, and so on. But eventually I realized that I reached a point where some cards were just not... I am a player who does like owning and purchasing cards, and I was realizing that there was a detriment and a limit of what I was capable of doing, because eventually I reached a point that I was exhausted with it, and kind of shifted gears and changed things up. But the difference here is that when I think about the foundation of what Odric Bloodcursed was on its inception back a couple years ago, and I think about my journey as a player, and I'll say this, I was the transition of the Simic player to the Boros player. That is the line. And that's a very weird gradient to shift through. But it's just, it's challenged me at every step of the way. I'm excited to play it because of the reaction I get out of people in a way that is appealing to me as a brewer and just as a person, in a way to socially engage with people. So it's a conduit in so many different faces of what Magic is about. That's why this thing's going to be sticking around with Odric Bloodcursed in the command zone for as long as I can reasonably push it. And I feel as if in the 2 years since I've made it, I've been doing a pretty good job of championing that energy.
Plus, you've also figured out how to really get all that good old clickbait energy and just get people so annoyed by you talking about it so much that they're willing to just, like, I mean, how thick is your skin for, like, random people? It's like, oh, this card is unplayable now. I mean, is it as bad now as it was 2 years ago?
Are you still getting hate? People are just saying, they're like, from their perspective, this card is not good. And it's not, it's not the same. So people will always be volatile, when things are running hot, preview season's coming out or whatever. It's very easy to get caught up on the hype train. And it's very easy to get caught up on the boo, this sucks train, right? And people's opinions are just now, yeah, this card could just be better. I'm very disappointed. And I'm like, I'm sorry to hear that. I will continue to do what I'm doing because this brings me joy.
Mm-hmm. And that's definitely the same way I look at my deck, is I know Smothering Tithe is a problem for me. I get it. I already said this before. But on the other hand, I don't care. You know, this is the kind of deck where it's... And again, I've been keeping track of my game statistics since 2021. So thank you to Andy, formerly of the Guardian Project podcast, for suggesting I do this. But, Koth of Ed is my most played commander, or at least, you know, of the linear deck, of the same deck, he is my most played commander. I have a most played commander who's had, like, three very different versions of decks, so I'm not going to include that. And, yes, I even have my win percentage, and it is roughly 30%. So it means that I am doing something right with this deck. You know, some of it has to do with, you know, I'm not going to play it into an obvious bad matchup. So there's a little bit of gamesmanship, I guess, if you want to say it that way. But on the other hand, it's like if I find a pod where they're just chill, they're not going to go gunning for me just because that's like we're just playing, sitting down to play a Magic game. It's a very good deck to bring out because it allows me to not only get to show basically a shirtless demon in a Hawaiian shirt just because that looks effing awesome, I'm not going to lie, but just the fact that it's a fun deck to play, and it honestly should not be as good as it is, but it works, and I think that really surprises people. And again, I think that's really the thing about a signature deck, especially how we've constructed ours, is part of the reason why it is a signature deck is we are, in theory, trying to prove people wrong, too, with every time we play it. Every time we do something cool, it's like, hey, you say this card sucks, but look at what I just did. And I know you're going to deny this, Cole, but it's true. It is very true. You are trying to stick it to people
when you play that Audrey deck. I'm a monster. And every time they're like, yeah, you got to prove it. And I look at my hand and I look at the board state by like turn 4 or turn 5. I'm like, not today, but I'll get back to you.
Yeah, and it's not just about playing Magic. It's about leaving a statement, too, I think, especially in regards to these personal decks. And I think, again, that's where these decks will differ from my very poorly defined example of the Wise Mothman, or let's go back with Voja here, you know, with all the discourse that's been going on about that recently, which I'm not going to get into, but the concept of we built these decks and we are building them because people think they suck. So we're trying to prove those folks very wrong about those particular decks. And that is a very different axis for building the deck than someone building that Wise Mothman deck or building that Voja deck, where in some cases they can be linear, or you're going to build them for a very different reason. Part of the reason why we built these was, one, they're exciting, but also, two, because people told me or tell you they suck, right? So, you know, that gives you a little bit of extra incentive. There's that secret sauce to say, well, you know, it doesn't really suck that much. I'll show you why. And then you build them, you at least do something cool, and then you try to change some perceptions. So at least that's how I look at my personal deck, and I'm sure you felt the same.
It's easy to bring ego into Commander or Magic in general. You know, everyone wants something out of it. I used to play Standard back when I started playing Magic, and now I'm very much not the only competition that I could ever bring to the table in terms of Commander, and especially playing this deck, is just the bravado of playing it. I'm there to perform, I'm there to act up and pretend like, oh, I'm gonna windmill slam and destroy you, but like, the deck's not like that because of my own personal restrictions and personal philosophies. And if the deck does well in the face of overwhelming odds, then I've done what I've intended to do. And if it crushes a table before they have a chance, I certainly hope it's because of it's a combination of factors, and not just the fact that I've overtuned it to Oblivion. And if people walk away content with how the game turned out, including myself, whether or not I win or lose, then I've done what I've set out to do as a Magic player.
Yeah. The real key here is, though, that you enjoy playing the deck, win or lose. And I think that versus any other deck you have ever built or played, you would say that Audric brings you the most joy.
Yeah, by far. Like, this deck is the best.
Yeah. There you go. So then that's what is your signature deck. Is really the last piece, I think, is that you legitimately enjoy the deck, and you can find solace in the little things. Even if the deck just is a complete dud and doesn't do anything, the fact that you're not going to just throw the deck aside for 3 months and not play it again, you want to play it again. You want to show people what that deck can do. And I really think that is the sauce. And again, I keep saying that, but it's a stupid analogy, but I'm just going to keep harping on it, right? It's like, that is the reason why you get up in the morning. It's not to work. It's not to have any connections. It's just to play off.
Well, I mean, hey, if I didn't have connections, I wouldn't be playing this deck at all because I have no one to play with.
You know.
But I have dreamed about this deck, though. I will not lie about
but,
that.
But, yeah, really. Okay, that I dreamed about the time I thought a Mystic Remora was a creature. That was a really weird dream. But anyway, that is beside the point. But I have not dreamed about this deck yet, though. I don't really know if I want to. Kothavit's kind of scary, right?
It's time for your sleep paralysis demon, and his name is Kothaped. And you're like, no, please, let me know. Let me go, please.
No, please, I don't want to draw any more cards.
Post interest, you will draw those cards. you will do it.
There's a reason why I never volunteered to work with... I don't know if you remember Sheepwave or not. But yes, Megan did build a shock box.
I remember this, yeah.
So for those who don't know, I had Megan on years ago to do an episode, a very early episode of the show, and about that time they had created a shock box for any time a player takes damage in Commander, you get a small electric shock. Well, the problem with Kothafed is that anytime a permanent triggers, it'll go on the stack. So all of a sudden, with the shock box, you know, if there's a board wipe, I could be taking 15 to 20 shocks of electricity in a row. It's not just one. It is 15 to 20 shocks in a row. So there's this deck is not shock box compliant. I will just say that much.
You know, I never realized that... I remember when Megan made the shock box, and I was just like, look, magic can already cause us irreparable pain. Why would you also add physical damage on top of that?
Yeah, well, it's all the more reason for me not to play with the shock box technology with this particular deck. But again, I digress off of that. It was just kind of a funny aside that just popped in my head. It's like, you know what, like, the dumbest reason to not play this deck would be? That.
That would probably be the only reason why. For my physical health and well-being.
Yeah, because let's be honest, I'm not going to go, don't! Every time I take damage, you know, that would really hurt. Yeah, it would not be fun. But anyway, I think we have gotten our point across. We have talked about signature decks so much and just general BS that I hope that we have inspired someone out there to, if you have not found a signature deck that you feel like you should be the expert on the world and no one knows more than you, go find a legendary creature that speaks to you. It doesn't matter what it is. Find one that speaks to you, work on it endlessly, give up your job and the rest of your life and just dedicate your life to that commander, and, you know, you'll be on your way. You're doing good. You're doing good. And if you already have a signature deck, hopefully we have put a bit of a, I don't know, a designation, kind of an explanation on why you feel so interested in a particular commander, why you will bling it out, why you will get an altered version of your commander cards in your deck, why you'll foil things out, why you will double or triple sleeve things, although I don't really know why people do that, but again,
no, I think that's
weirdo.
that's a little extreme in my opinion,
just things
but,
like
know,
that
what can you do?
You've never tried to do a cut on a triple sleeved CDH deck.
Good to pass.
I will just say that
thank
much.
You very much.
Yeah, I never feel comfortable trying to do that. Because it's just there's like usually they triple sleeve because they have all the real cards in there. So it's like I'm touching $6,000. Woohoo! I don't want to touch these things. You know, I feel like they will crumble to dust if I even lay my finger on them. They will just go. They'll be gone on the wind. So I don't know. Things like that. But anyway, I hope that we have not just regaled our experiences of signature decks, but also have inspired you to either build one or to really just put the term onto what the affinity you feel for a particular deck, and we hope that you will go forward and continue to update that deck, and in some cases probably dumpster Cole or I or both of us over a game of Magic the Gathering, and we'll just we'll just take it, right? You know, that's what we are as Magic players. Sometimes we just take the punishment and we keep coming back for more. I don't know why we do it.
I don't know. Magic's fun. So Magic's good, you know, good enough for me, so that's why I keep coming back. Literally, yeah, no kidding.
I could do this all day. So anyway, Cole, thank you so much for taking the time to be on with me today. It was great having you. Great talking about this signature deck. I feel like this is something that we really should have talked about like 2 years ago. But on the other hand, we wouldn't have all this hindsight, and then we wouldn't have been able to pull that niche 2020-2021 reference out. You know, have it actually. Yeah, have
it would have
some
been funny
to
do that 2 years ago and then come back and have that retrospective. But I also think that where you've gone in 5 years and where I've gone in 13, 11 years, I don't know, something like that. Like, we know we know what we like now more than ever, and this is just a good indicator of that.
Mm-hmm. All right, so yeah, now that we've reached the end of today's episode, Cole, give a shout out to all of your socials. Where can the good people who are now hopefully inspired to build signature decks
of
their own
find
your stuff on the internet?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at UncommonCMDRMTG because there's a character limit and I couldn't spell out Uncommon Commander MTG, so we had to make it work. I am the co-host of the Heroes Blade Vibe Check. For that, all of the socials is on HBVC_MTG on Twitter as well. And then the podcast is available probably everywhere MTG in Quarantine is available. So go check us out. The episodes are notoriously long. Don't worry about it. It's a great time to fill your day.
Yeah, definitely go listen to their episodes. I really need to get around to doing that, but again, I am notoriously slow at picking up on content. So
I'm not holding you to
that. More of a me problem.
Do
Don't
not
be
worry
a me.
About it.
Okay, fair enough. It's also the reason why I don't expect people to listen to all 250 episodes of the MTG in Quarantine podcast and growing. I think we're at 260, but who cares? 250 sounds cooler. Anyway, you can, like Cole said, you can find those on the usual podcast LSS, your Google's, Apple, Spotify. Well, actually, not Google anymore. They're kind of shutting that down. So, Apple, Rocket FM. Dang, I can't do without Google anymore. I need that. It's like, it is a bulwark. I've had this together for like 3 years, and now I can't do that. So Google, Apple, Spotify, Player FM, Rockcast, Podcast, Overcast, Breaker, and a million others. I don't remember all of them clearly, but if it's a major podcast outlet, you can find my stuff and Cole's stuff on those major podcast outlets. You can also find me on Twitter at MTG in Quarantine. Hopefully not talking about Ward 3 or my unhealthy obsession with a tireless tracker card. But, you know, it is what it is. I like what I like. And, since we reached the end of the episode here, I'd like to give a huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine. It's a huge round of thank yous again to Mr. Big Benz, Nick S., Frugal Brutal, and Coach J-Row for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine for more information. And I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.